Good evening, everyone, and welcome to NAMAS Seminars in Ayurveda. My name is Kitty Castellanos, and I will be moderating this evening's call. Developed and hosted by NAMAS PACE program, the Seminars in Ayurveda are a 60-minute monthly teleconference that aim to enhance the Ayurvedic profession through educational engagement. Recordings of past seminars are available to members. If you are a professional member of NAMA, you are able to receive one PACE credit by listening to tonight's seminar. A survey will need to be completed to receive that credit. After you listen to the seminar to earn the credit, locate the specific title of the seminar on the PACE program listings page. And the credit survey for this seminar will be available by the end of the week. So it won't be available immediately following, but by the end of the week, you should be able to find that survey. At this time, I'm going to mute everyone so that we can hear our presenter more clearly, and there will be a chance for everyone to ask their questions towards the end of the seminar. So if you have questions, make sure you go ahead and write those down, and there'll be an opportunity for that. And also, our presenter tonight has provided us with handouts, and so those can be located on NAMA's website. So if you go to ayurvedanama.org and you click under the Member Center tab, and then you'll see the drop-down menu and click on Seminars in Ayurveda. If you look for tonight's title, then you'll see a green button that says Download Handouts here. So once again, if you go to ayurvedanama.org and then click on Member Center and then click on Seminars in Ayurveda, you'll be able to find this evening's handouts that will go along with our presenter's lecture. Wonderful. And at this time, I have the wonderful honor of introducing tonight's speaker. Dr. Jaya Gopalparla is the founder and director of Athriya Ayurvedic Integrative Health Center in Long Beach, California. Additionally, he is a professor of Ayurvedic medicine and internationally known speaker and has over 20 years of teaching and clinical experience. And we're very excited to have you tonight, Dr. Parla. So welcome.
Thank you, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So, and I'll just pass it over to you at this time, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
So
as Katie said, those of you who haven't got the chance to download the presentation, please do that so that you can be following as I go through the topic. So my topic is the role of Ayurvedic practitioner in integrative case management of Amavata. So the good news is that as Ayurvedic practitioners, we have something to offer to the patients or the group of people who are suffering from Amavata. So now I stayed with a little bit of confidence because I've been working with cases of Amavata, mostly word of mouth. That's what gets most of the Ayurvedic patients to our practice, as you may all know. So we, word of mouth, one Amavata patient comes in and then they find it a little more beneficial, the next one and then so on. So I have, gained a little bit of confidence in treating these cases of Amavata. That's what I'm going to share with you. And I hope it will be beneficial for you in your practice. So let's go into the a little bit of introduction into, now when I say Amavata, it's somewhat translated to rheumatoid arthritis, but it is not just the rheumatoid arthritis, so don't have a fixated idea that all rheumatoid arthritis cases should be considered as Amavata, but among the Sandhigata Vyadis, that means the diseases that manifest in the joints, the symptoms of Amavata most match with match with the rheumatoid arthritis. So that's why I have taken it in the introduction that Amavata is to be studied as rheumatoid arthritis in this presentation. So let's see the nature of rheumatoid arthritis. Everybody would have come across, all the listeners, you might have come across RA in your practice, either when you're practicing or when you're learning from the schools that where you graduated from. Somebody would have come, bought a case that is of the Amavata or rheumatoid arthritis, where, see, the first thing that you notice is the joints. Sometimes if it is acute, you may not see significant change in the structure of the joint, but you would do see that the functionality of the joint is first affected. So there is pain during movement, that is the first, classical symptom. And then comes the inflammation, and then the complete expression of the disease being autoimmune disease. So rheumatoid arthritis is a chronic systemic inflammatory disease that is of autoimmune origin. So it affects mostly the smaller joints, but also larger joints. It doesn't spare any joint. It can involve any joint. For example, the jaw, like the TMJ, can sometimes turn into rheumatoid arthritis. Because I had a case not too long ago, about 4.5 months ago, where the person had severe pain after the dental work, and then he went back to the dentist, and the dentist referred him to a rheumatologist, and sure enough, it was a flare-up of rheumatoid arthritis in the jaw. So it doesn't leave any joint. It can affect any joint in the body. So it is one of the, leading causative factors for morbidity in the developed countries. So when I say morbidity, that means it involves lack of, functionality, ability to work, ability to lead a normal life. So what does, this involve? The one thing that we need to remember is that in the rheumatoid arthritis, the synovial joint, the synovial membrane under synovial liquid or the fluid that's present in it is what all of us know is affected. And that's what, leads to the inflammation. So the synovial inflammation causes the cartilage destruction, bone erosion, and subsequently joint deformities. So first it is the involvement of the synovial fluid, then the cartilage, the tarunasthi, that's what we call. Just as you want to remember that synovial joint, the fluid inside the synovial joint is Shleshaka Kapha, that Ayurveda recognizes that it is responsible for sandhibandhana, that means holding the joints together and maintaining the integrity of the joint. And then the tarunasthi, which is the cartilage, and then the bone itself, the asthi itself, is gradually involved. So the progression is seen from the fluid, that is more liquidy tissue, towards the semi-solid tissue to the bone, which is the solid tissue. So the gradual progression from the earlier stages to the chronic stages. So the prevalence is, seen about 1% in the U.S. population. Every one person in 100 people is suffering from rheumatoid arthritis. And then women are three times more, common to suffer from rheumatoid arthritis than the men. That's it's true in my observation as well. People who come to my clinic here, also I see more women and then few men as well. So prevalence in age, and sex, the older age group, of course, is going to experience more of this. So this is a condition that's seen after 40 years of age. But no hard and fast rule. We do have some cases with as early as I had a patient as 11 years old child suffering from rheumatoid arthritis of knee. So that's also a possibility. But, you know, we will see that the later age group is more commonly experiencing rheumatoid arthritis. So conservative treatments, we have, you know, many varieties of treatments will go through. People do, you know, take a wide range of medications that's meant for rheumatoid arthritis, right from immune suppression to anti-inflammatory, you know, type of drug therapy that that people take. So in U.S., about 60 to 90% of the people are willing to try some kind of CAM modality, that means complementary and alternative medicine for their rheumatoid arthritis. So that's how they come up, we come across people coming to Ayurvedic, you know, practitioners like us, who need, you know, additional support, because sometimes the drugs can have significant side effects, or they may not tolerate certain drugs, so they want to see what other alternative medicines can do. And Ayurveda happens to have a very comprehensive treatment plan for rheumatoid arthritis, or Ama Vata in this case. So I have a visual here. Those of you who have downloaded the presentation, you will see what happens in normal joint and osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. Here, normal joint is, you know, healthy sandhi, whereas osteoarthritis is mostly involving vata, not so much of synovial fluid, but whereas rheumatoid arthritis involves the, you know, inflammation of the synovial fluid and the synovial membrane. So both gets involved. And then, as I said, cartilage and then the bone, you know, gradually gets into the pathology. So I have a very interesting picture here. Normal synovial fluid, non-inflammatory synovial fluid, inflammatory synovial fluid, septic and hemorrhagic. So if you see the test tubes in which, you know, aspirations from different, you know, joints, mostly from the knee. So when they draw it out, it's very clear and it's translucent, you know, in a way that it is almost like water. When it gets slightly inflamed, then it will go into more and more murkiness. And then inflammatory, when they draw an aspiration to do studies on what type of inflammatory disease, which is also happens to be a method of diagnosing rheumatoid arthritis, is to put a needle into the joint and aspirate the fluid, and this aspirated fluid is sent for further diagnosis or, I mean, investigation. And then usually by the time you draw it into the syringe, you will see that it's not a clear fluid anymore. It's having some murkiness. Sometimes it may even have pus, depending on, you know, what type of involvement it is. Most of the time when you draw the, when a rheumatologist or a pathologist draws the fluid from the joint, it looks murky, like the middle test tube that you see here. Then we also see people bringing in the imaging, which we say either x-rays or CT scans, most recently MRIs. So MRI, first, is the science of inflammation is seen from the, you know, imaging you look at, and it will show that there is erosion. So if you look at the small arrow marks that you see in this thick, in the two imaging MRI images, so where there is density, lack of density in the bone. So when you take any image, if the tissue is denser, it does not allow the rays, whether it is magnetic resonance or x-rays, will be obstructed from reaching the target. So the area where the bone is dense and strong, you will see more whiter areas. And the areas where the bone is slightly depleted, the x-rays or the magnetic resonance can easily pass through these, you know, the empty areas or the weaker areas, producing a dark impression. So that's what you look at. Some of the areas that have been highlighted in this MRI are the places where the bone is now eroding. The erosion is happening due to the inflammation. Okay, so we also see that in the bone edema also is seen mostly involving bone marrow. So from an Ayurvedic point of view, if the condition is just involving asti, then it is manageable. If it is involving majja, which is bone marrow edema, it's a difficult case to manage. That's what I, you know, have found in my practice. So if they bring a report saying that there is bone marrow edema, then you want to tell them that it's going to be a difficult prognosis, and they may have to stay on your program for a little longer to find some results, because you cannot, you know, promise them quicker results or quicker remission of the symptoms. So blood tests, we have very important as Ayurvedic practitioners. We may not know how to read an MRI. It's easy to read the report which is attached to the MRI, because, you know, to make out these subtle radiological changes in the MRI or in the CT scan, you have to be an expert. But what you can read is definitely read through the report that has been printed after the investigation is done. If it says that the carpal bones show erosion, then you know what they are talking about. Erosion is because the asti dhatu kshaya, that means the reduction in the asti dhatu leading to these spots of lacking, the bone lacking its density. Or if it says the carpal bones or the heads of the carpal bones or the metacarpal bones or phalanges show bone marrow edema, it'll show in there the distal phalange shows the bone marrow edema, then you know that it is a progressive, a strong pathological disease, may cause upadrava, that means complications. Okay, so going into the blood tests are the most common ones what your patients are going to bring to you. So first thing they say is rheumatoid factor positive or negative. So it is a serum-based test. So what they do is they draw the serum and then they add a reagent. It's also called as Rosenvaller test. So Rosenvaller was the one who invented this test, where there's certain type of blood-brown proteins that react when to a reagent to show the active inflammation going on in the body, in the joints. So the rheumatoid factor, earlier, about 20 years ago, rheumatoid factor test was the number one test to prove either it is a rheumatic joint disease or a non-rheumatic joint disease. But nowadays, over a period of time, this test has lost its value, because number of false positives and negatives or significant. So when I say, if somebody may come up with, severe joint swelling, and they come and then they show you that their RA is negative, the RA factor, then you'll think, oh, this is not a rheumatoid arthritis. But otherwise, when you do the imaging, it shows that it is a rheumatoid condition. So that's why RA factor or RA test is not considered to be the real test that is in the diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis. But you will see that false positives, SLE also gives you a similar positive test, and then also the sarcoidosis, tuberculosis, syphilis, chronic liver diseases all show a positive rheumatoid RA factor test. So that's why it becomes not so significant to find either RA positive or RA negative. The next one is the most important test that we find, which is called a C-reactive protein test, which is basically an antibody specific test. So the anti-CCP stands for anti-cyclic citrullinated peptide antibodies, which are found to be positive in rheumatoid arthritis. It gives you about 95% test positive to show that it's rheumatoid arthritis. So we don't have to send it as an Ayurvedic doctor, practitioner or doctor. You don't have the ability to send for these investigations. But believe me, when the patients come, they have done all these tests, at least you should know what do they stand for and then how you can use them for your own knowledge. Then synovial fluid analysis, as I earlier explained, the synovial fluid is aspirated from the joint, and then they look for specific type of proteins that are present in it. They also see for the viscosity of the liquid, and then the formed elements, that's what we call formed elements in the synovial fluid. So most people don't like to put a needle into the joint until unless it is, you know, critical or absolutely necessary. Like I was saying, I had a child who is 11 years old. One knee, was involved, and it started with a fall at the school, and he fell and it healed. After healing, there was a slight swelling, and then the boy would not put weight on this joint because it would hurt him. And then he, in a matter of about 3.5-4 months, the joint after healing started accumulating some fluid inside. So when the doctor did not know what it is, they had to put a needle inside and then aspirate. That's when they came to know that there is a, rheumatoid pathology involved in this case. So you don't find a lot of the reports with synovial analysis, but you do find blood tests with C-reactive protein and then sometimes rheumatoid factor. The last one is the ESR, test. That is, the ESR test is also a very generic test that you find. ESR stands for erythrocyte sedimentation rate. Erythrocytes are a type of blood cells. You may know in the blood we have different types of white blood cells, erythrocytes, lymphocytes. So these erythrocytes sediment if it increases. The process is they draw the blood, they centrifuge it, and then they leave it to see how much of sedimentation happens. If the sedimentation is more than 2 millimeters per cc of blood, then we consider it to be a positive ESR test. Again, ESR test can be very general. It is, ESR is high in tuberculosis. ESR is high in other blood-bound diseases. Any infection may also send the ESR high. But among all, the anti-CCP test is the most, dependable test, okay? So symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis, as we all know, it is depending on the degree of tissue inflammation, whatever the tissue is involved. There is severity of the pain, fatigue, lack of interest in eating food, lack of appetite. So two things here we are seeing from the Ayurvedic viewpoint of view. When you look at from Ayurvedic eye, Agni is deficient. The person has low-grade fever, jwara exists. Then also the fatigue, that is shrama. Shrama, jwara, and agnimandya is what is listed in the common symptoms. Other than that, muscle stiffness, joint ache, and also, joint stiffness, all are also seen in the symptomatology. So criteria for diagnosis in terms of rheumatoid arthritis is, morning stiffness. Then we have pain on movement of the joint or tenderness in at least one joint, swelling of the joint, then symmetrical joint swelling. Sometimes, the joints like both knees are involved, both, wrists are involved. That I see in most of the cases involving just the, symmetrical joints. That's how it's the classical nature of rheumatoid arthritis. It is not mandatory, as I was giving you an example of a child who developed the rheumatoid arthritis. It is unilateral, but it can be very, very rare. So subcutaneous nodules, the small palpable nodules that you find under the joint when you palpate it, radiological changes, which is imaging, blood, rheumatoid factor in the serum, then also mucin, you know, precipitate in the synovial joint. That the mucin is what is very classical mucin. You know, remember that when we are discussing Ayurvedic point of view, then the histopathologic changes in the synovial joints and then the nodules. So these are the symptoms. At least 6 weeks of these persistent symptoms is what makes a person to be diagnosed having rheumatoid arthritis. Okay, some of which, and I have few cases in which a person was diagnosed within 2.5 weeks, not even 6 weeks, where the person was hale and healthy and functioning normally, and from a small joint pain in the wrists and shoulders, went to wheelchair, bound situation in about 2.5 weeks. That is also possible, but chronic, your diagnosis will be after 6 weeks. Having learned all from the modern perspective, which gives us some idea, because our minds are tuned to understand better, because our education makes us to go towards modern concepts and understand them quicker. And then now we are entering into a little bit of upper hill task, that is Amavata or rheumatoid arthritis according to Ayurvedic textbooks. So Amamcha Vatam Amavatam. So there is Ama and Vata, that is what is called as Amavata. We all know this. And that's definition from Amarakosha or Vijay Rakshita's textbook. The idea that's been said is Vata, functionalities of Vata, as we have learned and understood, is movement. So nothing can come in the way of Vata. Right? No food, no pitta, no kapha, no ama. Nothing can come in the way of vata. Vata has to flow. In this condition, this vata flow is obstructed by ama. So that's why ama is obstructing the flow of vata, and you call it as ama vata. Right? Amena sahito vata ha ama vata. Ama, the next sentence that Vijay Rakshita is saying is that it's just not Vata and Ama independent, but they are together. They're amalgamated. They are viciously in conjunction with each other. So that is Ama Vata, he's saying. Okay? So then the next sentence that we have, the substance which undergoes a typical change in the process of digestion is called Ama. So if you all remember from the textbook Agni and Ama, I hope we all are very, very familiar with that concept. That is how Ashtanga Hridaya, Vagbhata says, Ushmano Alpa Balatvena, Dhatum Adhyam Apachitam. So the first dhatu that is getting formed, which is Rasa. Rasa is not properly formed. Why they are, emphasizing on the rasa? Because rasa is the one which distributes whatever the gut has broken down, whatever the kosha has broken down. It is the rasa that takes it and circulates it. It's like, rasa is like a mailman who takes it to deliver to the different, dhatus. So that dhatu, which is first dhatu, is carrying something in its circulation, that cannot be appropriated into the body, right? There is something that cannot be used by the body, or it cannot be excreted by the body. That entity is called as ama. Dushtam amashaya gatam ratam. So it starts from the amashaya, and from there it can, go to any part of the body. And here it happens to be, this is a common, pathogenesis. It is common for all systemic diseases. It's not just for Amavata. It is for all systemic diseases. But what we are seeing here is that this type of Ama, this specific type of ama that is formed is very similar to Shleshaka Kapha in the joint, right? So gunataha, quality-wise, then karmataha, action-wise, it has something which is similar to that of Shleshaka Kapha. That's why this ama that is formed in the gut will directly go to the sandhi, to the Shleshaka Kapha, right? That's why ama can be any variety, but this variety of ama is specific to the joint. That's what we need to keep in mind. Okay, so then etiology of amavata is being given by all textbooks, right? From, you know, Charaka Sushruta we find. I have taken later textbook after Charaka Sushruta and Vagbhata. I have taken Madhava, you know, Nidana. Then I have Vangasena's textbook, Gada Nigraha, Harita Samhita. Then Yoga Ratnakara and Bhavaprakasha. From 8th century AD to 16th century AD, those textbooks, how do they list the symptomatology? So, I mean, the etiological factors, not symptomatology, etiological factors. First thing that we see is viruddha ahara. Viruddha means something in the food that a person is consuming is abnormally combined, incompatibly combined, right? So viruddha ahara is one of the causes. That's why the food has it becomes more and more complex. So the more complex the food is, then the possibility of creating that type of ama is seen. So you find it in all textbooks except Harita Samhita. Then viruddha cheshta, that means any activity that is not conducive to the body, like eating and doing yoga, or eating and hiking, or hiking and then soon after hiking, you know, jumping into the pool to cool off. So such things, when people do, body does produce abnormal, you know, metabolites. Manda Agni, Agni when it is weak, it is, you know, uniform to every, you know, textbook. Nishchala means lack of activity can also cause the amavata. Vyayama soon after bhojana, that is especially the food that is rich. If somebody eats and then does the exercise, that also causes the amavata. Then kanda sevana, kanda shaka sevana, anything that is tuberous, if taken in excess, like it may be potatoes, or it may be sweet potatoes, yams, or purple yams, if they are taken every day in excess, then also it creates that type of ama that goes towards the joints. Lastly, vevaya, untimely sexual activities can also lead to amavata. What are the general symptoms? So, angamardaha, first thing that you see is body ache, right? Second thing that you see is anorexia, lack of, you know, appetite, lack of taste, right? Then trishna, that is thirst. Then hrillasa, like as if there is, you know, like a sense of nauseousness, a general malaise, right? Then a feeling of heaviness, that is gauratva, jvara, indigestion, inflammation of the body parts, which includes like smaller joints, sometimes even tendons, they have said. Tendons, sira, khandara can also be involved in the amavata. Okay, general symptoms. This I thought was very, very interesting slide. That is, you see, what happens is in the initial stages, he has done this comparison. So when the joints are just becoming red and then mildly swollen, that we see in many of our patients, even though they have no rheumatoid arthritis, they come and tell, oh, my hands are a little stiff in the morning, but afterwards it will go away, right? So in that, what is happening, the new blood vessels are developing in that region. That means ama cannot pass through the normal blood vessels. Ama creates its own blood vessels to move through, right? Isn't that very interesting? Then ama, slowly there is lymphocyte infiltration. That means the to digest the ama, the body sends in some, you know, pitta to digest it, right? So that it can be resolved. But it is not a resolving type of ama. So there is continuous ama production and continuous, you know, inflammation that goes on without resolving it. Largely after the lymphocyte infiltration, the joints will swell up. And then synovial hypertrophy, the joints will get deformed, digested, like almost, you know, cooked by our own, agni that is present and abnormally directed towards the joints, right? Quickly going through types of ama, vata, the types which we have according to Bhav Prakasha, vata anubandha, which is predominantly pain predominant, pitta anubandha, there's burning and then redness, kapha anubandha, kapha is, related, it is stimita, that means stiffness in the joints or lack of movement. According to dosha anubandha, Madhava Nidana, Madhavakara, who is the text writer of the textbook, he says, we will see Vasaja type of Ama Vata, Pitta, Kapha, Vata Pitta, Vata Kapha. I have seen few of these, not all of them. I have seen some of them which are Sannipatika as well. That means all three doshas are involved. Very, very difficult to manage these cases, right? Samanya, Avastha Veda and then Pravruddha. That means mild dosha aggravation and excessive dosha aggravation is what is the Avastha Veda. Okay. Now, how do we say that this can be? In Ayurveda, a Amavata in its early stage involving one dosha is completely reversible, right? That's what, Madhava Nidana is saying. Two doshas involved, you can relieve and maintain. I have so many patients in my practice who come in and then are maintaining without taking any other medication. You can maintain it. If it's very advanced with three doshas, then it is very, you can only maintain pain relief and then give them a quality of life that is, not that, taxing on their body. You can manage it. But three dosha, conditions, I have seen few of them are not easy to manage, okay? What are the complications? Complications are very classical, as the modern textbook says. There is, deformity, kanjatva. Then it is sankocha, constriction, right? Deformity and constriction. Then kalayakanja means joints will become very dominant. Rest of the tissues will start depleting, right? Because ama is, now taking all the nourishment that's coming towards the body, and then remaining dhatus will get depleted, right? Jadya, lack of movement, nausea, bloating, things like that. Then the angavaikalya, that means even body having, bent over, like lordosis or kyphosis. Such things will start happening when the disease will, progress from into the deeper tissues. Then finally, it will end up in Vata Vyadi. So there is a stage when Ama Vata, when you start treating the case, it will go into Nirama. That means no Ama stage. Then I will treat it as, Sandhivata. I'll go into it in a minute. Treatment principle, Langana, that means deeply. Langana doesn't mean you put the patient into fasting. That's always what we think. Langana means depleting or depriving the person from those causative factors that relate or that produce this type of ama. So Langana, Svedana, sweating. I have a specific type of a sweating that I use for these cases. I will talk about it in a minute. Use of herbs. With tikta and katurasa, bitter taste is my favorite in these cases, and it works really, really well. Then deepana pachana, very rarely I do virechana for the patients because they're so weak, and they don't want to be, purging, sitting and purging when their whole body hurts. So usually I don't do virechana. Snehana, sometimes I will give you what all the oils that we can use for snehana. Snehana means oiliation. Bastis, I use a lot of enemas in my practice. And how patients can take it home and then take it. Ruksha Sveda Valuka Potali, that means dry type of, sweating techniques, which make the person, sudation techniques. Upanaha, applying the poultices. I also use a herbal paste from time to time on the patient, depending on their pain level and then the extent of swelling of the joint. Yukti Vipashya Chikitsa, very important. You have to take patient under your confidence because otherwise patient is so scared of this condition because there's so much of fear out there about this condition. It's very, very difficult. So whatever herbs that you choose in the beginning should be so specific that the patient finds relief, right? Otherwise, they will try for 2 weeks, maximum of 3 weeks to a month, and then they'll give up because they think it's not working. So what you need to do is first choose Amapachana. In my practice, the first thing that I would suggest to all of you is to take Dashamula. Dashamula is available. That's a blessing of Dhanvantri that is here. It's here in the U.S. We can make Dashamula Kashaya. Very simple. You take 2 tablespoons of Dashamula, and then you add 2 cups of water, put some dry ginger into it, boil it for about 10, 15, 20 minutes, strain it, and the patient drinks it half in the morning, half at night. So which makes about a cup of tea, a cup of this Dashamula Kashaya. It's not the classical way of doing the Kashaya, but to keep the patients not to be discouraged to do so many things from Ayurvedic point of view, I have simplified certain things so that it's practical and doable for the patients. So Dashamula Kashaya, Hingu can be given by itself, or Hingvashtaka Churna can be given. So Vata that is stuck in the Dhatus, because Charaka says, Bilva Agni Manta Shonaka Kashmarya Patala Shala Parani Krishna Parani Nadigdika Bruhat Gokshurani Iti Dashemani. These 10 roots, Shwayatu Haranani Bhavante, that means they reduce swelling. So Vata that is not able to function in the joints, being clogged and blocked and amalgamated with Ama, this Dashamula Kashaya is able to release that the Vata. So Vyana Vata gets released when you give Dashamula Kashaya. Hingvashtaka will, once the released Vata comes into the Koshta, you need to give Hingvashtaka so that it moves downwards, because Hingvashtaka does Anuloma. Anulomana means downward movement. And lastly, you will give Avipatikar powder. Avipatikar powder at night time with hot water or morning and night, so that it eliminates the doshas that have come, ama that has come to the koshta from the joint. Continuing on the Yukti Vipashya Chikitsa, that is choice of herbs, Rasna, Nirgundi and Eranda, each one of them half a teaspoon. Right? Rasna half a teaspoon, Nirgundi half a teaspoon, and then Eranda. Rasna is Alpinia Galanga. You may all know Rasna. I don't have to tell you about Eranda, which is castor root. And then Nirgundi, which is Vitex Nigundo, which is also leaf powder, is what is used. Half a teaspoon of each with hot water or with honey can be mixed and then given. That's for the pain. Okay, if the person complains continuous pain, Rasna, Nirgundi and Eranda is wonderful to give 2-3 times a day to reduce pain. And my not so favorite is Simhanath Guguru, even though textbooks highly praise that Simhanath Guguru needs to be given in Amavata. In my personal experience, Simhanath Guguru has very minimal effect in the acute Amavata case. Whereas Hingvashtaka Churna can be continued to be given after the first stage, acute stage. Best will be to choose Kaishora Guggulu and Yogaraj Guggulu, right? Yogaraj Guggulu and Kaishora Guggulu, 2 in the morning, 2 noon, 2 night after food. 6 pills of Yogaraj Guggulu, 6 pills of Kaishora Guggulu. Yogaraj Guggulu helps to draw the vata from the joint. It helps to resolve the ama. It also rejuvenates the joint. Whereas Kaishora Guggulu will help with the blood that is coming into the joint. It will stop the abnormal blood flow and also prevent deformity of the joints. Because Kaishora Guggulu's primary condition is Vata Rakta, gout, where there is more deformity. If you don't treat ama Vata, after some time, ama Vata can turn into, gouty arthritis. It will show those symptoms, right? Yukti Vipashya, this is another wonderful thing that you can do. You can take Ruksha Potali, Sveda, That means you try some of the, you know, dry seeds and powders. Like I use sometimes salt. Sometimes I use sesame seeds. Sometimes I use powders of castor with, you know, hing, castor and hing together tied in a bolus. Sometimes ajwain seeds and hing and, you know, with salt. So, yeah, I heat it dry on a pan, you know, tied in a cloth, and then leave on the joints for some time. So this type of swedana or sweating will draw the ama from the joints and then brings it to the surface. Very, very effective, believe me. And the patient will find so much of relief that they'll start trusting you that your process is working. Sneha, sometimes application of the oil is only done when there is no ama, the swelling comes down, the redness comes down, then you can start using the oil. Saindavadi Taila, Kottam Chukkadi Taila, and Nirgundi Taila. Any of them, my favorite is Kottam Chukkadi oil. Kottam Chukkadi is one of the classical oils which can be even used in ama stage as well. So that's why Kottam Chukkadi oil, please make a note that if somebody comes with ama vata, you want to safely use some oil because usually ama vata oil is contraindicated. You know that, right? So Kottam Chukkadi will be one of the best oils to use in this condition. And then Shatapushpadi Lepa or Dashanga Lepa can be used. That also a paste. Shatapushpadi means it has fennel, it has dill seeds, it has horse gram. Such ingredients which are powdered, you mix it with hot water and then put it. And as what I do is I ask them to bring ace bandages. After putting the paste on, warm paste, I wrap it and then send them home with it. For about 2 hours they can keep it and then remove it. So that's one of the things that we do. As far as the panchakarma, as I said, virechana is indicated, but I personally don't prefer virechanas in the cases of amavata, but I do prefer, you know, bastis. So basti is enema. You can give kashaya basti made from dashamula kashaya basti, added with either saindavadi tailam, or you can add even sahacharadi tailam, sahacharadi oil, you know, mixed with dashamula, and shatapushpa kalka made from fennel seed. You know, as you know, you will have to add honey, you have to add salt, you have to add the oil, that is either Sahacharadi Tailam or you can use Saindavadi Tailam, and then the kashayam made from Dashamula, and then the last one is the kalka, the paste. The paste is the Shatapushpa made from fennel. So that is made into a concoction. I don't want to spend too much of time how to prepare it and all that. You can definitely refer to the textbooks to see how to prepare an enema. You make it and then give it to the patient to take it at home. So we send them with one oil enema and then one decoction enema so that they can do it at home. So we give them instructions how to do as well. So as far as the individual herbs are concerned, my favorite choice is Dashamula, as I said, along with Gugulus. In case Ashwagandha, where there is achiness, and then like one cannot hold a cup, there is weakness in the fingers, in the joints, where they cannot hold a cup, Ashwagandha really helps in bringing the strength. As I already said, Rasna, Nirgundi are wonderful for pain, whereas Guruchi and Punarnava are great for reducing swelling, and Musta, believe it or not, Musta is wonderful for reducing pain as well, right? If it is really swollen red joint, try Musta in large quantities. That can, 1 teaspoon in the morning, 1 teaspoon at night, Musta can relieve pain. Lastly, the ahara vihara, the what type of lifestyle you need to advise. Of course, anything that forms the ama that is similar to kapha, you should be avoided. Like dairy products, junk food, or even like rich food, which is creamy, rich with, you know, like some kind of creamy base should be avoided. Of course, anything that's significantly salty and sour should be avoided as well. Meats are not really good in this condition in the earlier stages, but when it goes to sandhivata stage, when the joints become dry, free of ama, then you can give, if they are open to meat soups or meat broth or bone broth, can help the joints. Whereas rice that is old, ginger, garlic, things. Sometimes Ayurveda recommends wheat, but we know there is a case with the wheat. I don't recommend wheat usually in people who are rheumatoid arthritis. I usually stick on to quinoa, rice, buckwheat, oatmeal, things like that, which are much more milder and easier to digest. We have a series of joint exercises. You can look at Bihar School of Yoga in their book Asana, Pranayama, Mudra, and Bandha, written by Swami Satyananda Saraswati. You see there is joint-specific exercises, which is called Pavana Muktasana series. Excellent. If you make a complete handout and give it to your patient, after your treatment, if they do those joint exercises, they come back and tell you, my mobility is increasing, my flexibility is increasing. So those type of exercises you can recommend. Also, you can give them other exercises too, like Pilates. Some of my patients do Pilates. They also find it's beneficial. Some of them also do warm pool treatments. That's also beneficial as well. So I hope this presentation gave you some idea how to treat Amavata in your practice. And we have about close to 10 minutes, about 8 minutes for question and answers.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, we'll begin the question and answer portion. So if you have a question, please press star 6 on your phone, and then we'll be notified in the Q&A queue. So like I said, just please press star 6, and then you will be instructed once your question is up. So here's our first question.
Hello, Dr. J.
Hello. Namaste.
Namaste, this is Melanie Smart.
Hi, Melanie, how are you?
I am well. Thank you for your
good
presentation. I'm treating somebody with rheumatoid arthritis, and I remember from your teachings that you had recommended sand poultice for joints. Could you just talk a little bit about that?
Okay. So it's called Valukas Veda. That's recommended in many of the classical textbooks, Melanie. What they suggest is you take a fine sand, and the sand is heated on a skillet, a cast iron pan or a skillet. You roast it or you heat it up until it becomes warm to tolerable hot. And then you take sand and then, pour it on a cotton cloth. And in the cloth, you will put this sand and then you tie it up.
Okay.
And then you use this for heating the joint. You leave it on the joint to a temperature that the patient is tolerable, and then simultaneously gently move these joints. In my experience, you can add garlic powder, like you get garlic, dry garlic powder, add it to the salt, to the sand, or you can add hing as well. So hing and garlic can be added when you're roasting the sand, and that can be tied into a bolus. Wonderful results, quick pain relief, and also more, flexibility in the joints.
What do you think about someone who goes in a hot tub?
Hot tub, the water, is okay. Dry is much better, dry heat. Yeah, because it is not just the vata, it is ama. So ama is always snigdha, ama is always pichila. So it is sticky, gooey, and sandra, it is dense. So anything that's dry heat is better. If they want to do dry sauna, that may be a better choice when they have ama in the joint.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Very nice talking to you. Namaste.
You too. Namaste.
Wonderful. Thank you for that question. And once again, if you have a question, you can please press *6 on your phone and we'll be notified in the Q&A queue that you have a question. So *6 to ask a question. We still have a few more minutes. Okay, we have one more question here. All right, you may ask your question.
Oh, thank you. Hello. Hello, doctor. My name is Jiren Wilson. Namaste. So thank you for this presentation. It's very, very useful.
Thank you.
The I think this is just a follow-up when you're talking about, you've mentioned that dry heat is much better to be utilized in this condition or in conditions that are very similar to it. So would that also be applicable to infrared saunas?
Yeah, it's only applicable to infrared as well, yes.
Okay, and that the infrared sauna, can that be utilized immediately with the patient, or should that wait till we after we try to apply
something better? Yeah, I would try these ancient methods because infrared is more an entire body exposure rather than specific to the joints. Here, the armor is specifically, you know, localized in the joint. So if there is infrared lamps that go on the specific joints, that may be a better idea than exposing to the entire body. Because underneath the armor and vata, there is also a pitta that is, you know, if you heat up the body or you expose the body to too much of heat as well, it may not be, you know, productive to this case.
All right. Thank you very much. So many people in my area use the infrared sauna that way. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
Thank you for your question. Dr. Parla, did you want to give your website information or anything out if people want to follow up with you?
Yeah. The website is athreyaayurveda.com. One word, Athreya and Ayurveda together. This is Athreya, A-T-H-R-E-Y-A, and A-Y-U-R-V-E-D-A, AthreyaAyurveda.com. And I also am associated with Ayurvedic herbal company called AthreyaHerbs.com. I want our practitioners to know that we put out podcasts we just started doing it. So we will be doing for practitioners separately, where we take up cases and then we discuss these cases. So that is also another venue where you can bring your case and then we discuss it and then the other practitioners can listen to it and then enrich their knowledge.
Oh, wonderful. That's a great resource. Thank you so much. And we are just at the top of the hour, so we're going to go ahead and draw tonight's seminar to a close. Thank you, Dr. Parla, so much. That was such a wonderful talk full of so much knowledge and real tangible things that I know that I'll take with me into my practice, and I'm sure the rest of the listeners feel the same. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Katie.
And thank you all for listening
to
tonight's... Yes, namaste. Thank you all for listening to tonight's seminar in Ayurveda. For NAMA professional members interested in receiving a PACE credit, there will be a link of this recording, and that will be available on the PACE listings page in approximately a week after the staff gets to edit the audio file is needed. And then once again, if you do want to get a PACE credit for this seminar, that survey that you need to take in order to get that PACE credit will be up on the NAMA website by the end of the week as well. So thank you all very much for attending this evening, and namaste.
Namaste.